Good afternoon and welcome to What Comes Next Live, Tuesday, 5 o'clock UK time. And my guest this week is Katie Elliott, who has a much more interesting office than me. Although we were comparing background notes, I don't have a keyboard or an Amico cards chart on the, in my office. It's a beautiful day in the south of England today, and we're just comparing notes on birdsong and what comes next after this. I think we're both saying we may just go for a walk in the country, in our different parts of the country. So welcome aboard, Katie. How are you?
Thank you, Tom. Thank you. I'm really well. Thank you. And I don't want to get competitive about offices. I'm rather admiring your artwork. So let's just appreciate one another's.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what's I saw you put something up on LinkedIn earlier. What have you been up to of late and what's on your mind?
Well, I've taken a little bit of time away from what I normally do. Mm-hmm. It was my birthday and I took a little time out in nature to have a bit of a holiday, which was great and reminded me how much I benefit from stepping outside of the everyday just for a little while. And in that time, some significant things have shifted for me. So, yeah, the idea of what comes next is particularly interesting right now.
I'm fascinated. So perhaps a little bit about what you know, where you are now and what got you there. And then just the floor is yours. I'd love to hear. I'm fascinated already.
So where I am now, well, right now I'm in Gloucestershire in my office and I run a little project called Little Challenges, mm-hmm. which is a website and a series of events and Amico cards. It's a collection of things. And the idea behind that is that I've spent the last 5 years collecting and sharing simple, practical, evidence-based ideas mm-hmm. that can help to make life a little bit gentler and kinder and easier in a variety of ways. So the reason I do that work is because for the first 43 years of my life, on and off, I really struggled in a number of ways, but particularly I struggled with my mental health. Mm-hmm. And 5 years ago, I had a very significant breakdown, which made me reevaluate everything that I was doing and how I was doing it. Mm-hmm. And so Little Challenges is kind of the fruit of that adventure in learning how to do things differently and in ways that have made life better mm-hmm. And also more livable, because to be absolutely honest, I wasn't doing so well on that front. So that's why I have a passion for sharing those sorts of ideas.
Fantastic. So, well, not what you had to go through, but for what you're actually giving back and gentler and kinder methods for living. So what's a couple of little challenges, ideas that everybody could benefit from?
Well, I gathered together an awful lot of the ideas because what I discovered quite early on was that in the moments when I didn't feel good in myself, mm-hmm. in the moments when my mood would drop or I was very tired or I was feeling anxious, it didn't seem to matter how many good things I knew about that could help me. I could never remember them. So one of the things I did was to gather all of those ideas together and I turned them into a pack of cards, which is what Amico cards are. And I've actually got a free poster on my website. So anybody who's interested can download that free of charge. So if you want to see what's on the cards, you can use that as a little prompt for yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's loads and loads of different ideas, everything from going out in nature, talking to someone, remembering to drink some water, expressing yourself in a variety of ways, perhaps through writing or listening to music or dancing, whatever it might be. They're all evidence-based. And I came up with a website to accompany those cards, because what I realized was in the moment when you don't feel great, you probably aren't that bothered about the evidence underpinning these ideas and telling you why they're a good idea and why they can be helpful. Mm-hmm. But at other times, it can be really good to understand some of the mechanisms at work and why things might be beneficial. So what I did was I made the cards as simple as possible to use. You basically just leaf through them right. and you look for ideas and prompts of things that you might like to try. Mm-hmm. But then there's also an accompanying website which has a page for every single card. And then if you want to go on there and find out more about the different ways in which going out in nature, for example, can be beneficial and different approaches that you might want to try, then you can find all kinds of supplementary information on there.
That's very cool. And what occurs to me as I'm listening and I'm feeling a resistance to the second part of that is that there's a huge commonality to the human experience. And at the same time, there are very many different processing styles. And I remember when I was looking to learn to go from an average golfer to a better golfer many years ago, in the Cayman Islands, there were two golf coaches, and one of them was highly analytical. Right, and used to explain everything he was doing and why it was important and what I needed to know. And the other one would encourage me to go hit some balls in the range and practice, play a couple of rounds of golf. And then when I walked up to him, he was like, to me, he was a Zen coach. He just used to say, I can't do a Southern accent, but he was from the Southern US. And his name was Mike. And he used to go, so Tom, tell me a story. And he used to talk about how it needed to feel. So I just started with a new Pilates instructor. I do Pilates equipment work, have done for a decade. And though I qualify as an accountant, I don't do analysis anymore. So I just need to know the feeling. But my recognition is that that's my resistance, and then different people need different things. They will need, sometimes you want, it's a wonderful combination you're talking about of what do you need in that moment?
Yeah.
And have, you know, I've not had the experience that you've described in any way, shape or form. But at one point a few years ago in my life, I had some very, very deep anxiety, for a few weeks. And it was almost an out of body experience because something I've not experienced this before. And I had people close to me saying, go to the GP, get some meds. And I went, I have a feeling I'll get through this. And I want to observe it because I want to be in a position to have some understanding for quite how brutal it is. It's worse, for me, it was worse than any physical pain I've ever experienced. But one of my things was stoic journaling. And I just knew that every morning and every night, I had it by the bed with a pen, and I knew I just needed to pick up, get the prompt, and do that. And that was one of several things that got me out of bed and got me to sleep at night. And so that you're giving this with the evidence basis, is very cool. So that's what you've been up to. I'm chomping at the bit and curious to find out. So you've just taken a bit of time out from the everyday. I've dragged you back into your office for half an hour. but you said it was kind of apposite to be thinking about what comes next. So, what comes next?
Well, it's a great question, and I'd love to have a really coherent answer for you, but I don't. Mm-hmm. But then that's part of the process, isn't it? And I think we can probably all recognize that sense of when you can feel that things are changing, but you can't necessarily see exactly what that might turn into yet. So my experience, my background, just because it might be useful for context, is I used to write and illustrate children's books. And then for a while I was a jazz musician and composer. And I did a variety of education projects with teenagers. And I've done quite a lot of different things in my life. So I'm very used to being self-employed, and I'm very used to inventing my own work, if you like. So I don't know how it is for other people, but I know that every now and again, I get this feeling of, it's a kind of squirminess on the inside. It's that sense of there's something new that wants to emerge. And you can try to argue with it, but in my experience, that doesn't work out so well. So these days I have more of a respectful, reverential kind of relationship with that feeling. I tend to pay attention when it appears. And so what I've been noting is that as well as creating amico cards and doing other, I run events, there are various things I do, but I spend a lot of time working one-to-one with people in a way that might be called coaching, but I don't really call it coaching. I'm not quite sure what it is, but I like to think of it more as accompaniment. There's a being with that happens.
Right.
And what I've noticed over the last few years is that people will often come saying that they want to talk about a particular thing, a particular challenge in their life. But underneath it all, it generally boils down to the same few things that are really present, that are really concerning for people. And they tend to be very fundamentally human things, I think, like when I get to the end of my life, what will it have been about? What will I have done? And will I feel okay about that? Am I enough?
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of really essential human questions. And I've found that more and more those questions are the things that absolutely absorb me. I think probably because, without meaning to be overly dramatic about it, I essentially had a near-death experience five mm-hmm. years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And having had that experience and come back from it, everything looks different.
Hmm.
And, you know, so you talk about stoic journaling, so you'll be very familiar with that idea of memento mori, that idea of contemplating the end of your life and how you want to spend your time and the meaning that you want to make of what happens to you. It feels to me increasingly important, actually, to create opportunities for conversations that can go to those places as quickly as possible.
Hmm.
And so I'm looking for new ways of working that support the exploration of those really, really big questions in a way that doesn't feel heavy or intimidating, but is actually very joyful.
Well, I can tell you that, those are two of the most existential, you know, what sits beneath questions for everybody. And then if you keep going up and up and up into what sits behind, then it's that. But in about 2 minutes, you got me there. There's something about the way you expressed it. I was just sitting there listening to you and at the same time without lots of thought going in my head, just the feeling of, yeah, that's that. And you mentioned memento mori. It's, you know, my own expression of that, you know, the Latin for remember you will die, is that when you say it in English, it could sound really heavy, right? But for me, it is, you know, you were talking about two blackbirds having like a, I'll put it in my words, like a rat battle at high volume, right, in a garden earlier. And I can hear the birds outside. I can see the trees flying outside my office window. I'm a heck of a lot more present to that than I might have been when I felt I was on the hamster wheel or the rat race years ago. So, yeah. So first of all, you're already doing it. and just, you said a few really key things I want to come back to, one or two. And, you know, my theme is around open leadership, which is about bravery, humility, openness, curiosity. And, you know, self-leadership is the start of that. And also there are people who listen to this podcast who work in employment. There are people who are entrepreneurs. I think you said you expressed something really powerful about that squirminess, or as another past guest on the show, my friend Chip Conley, talks about liminality as gooiness in his very Californian way. But actually just respecting was a word you used, respecting that feeling of squirminess that something is going to emerge. And the conventional 9-to-5, 5-day-a-week, whatever that might look like in the future, rat race, has us go, no, I can't look at that until I retire at 60 or 65. And entrepreneurs, people who are used to doing different things, you know, it's interesting just to observe the way you've expressed it of just going, right, well, something else is coming forward. And that means, you know, I might have to let go of a few things or to evolve things or to try some new things. I'm rambling a bit because you've dropped me into that space of going like, not so much the am I enough? I occasionally think about that, but generally speaking, the words of my mentor are in my ears of be more you. And, it's all he ever used to say to me. You know, we're all more than enough. So I'm generally good with that one, but it's the, I do like the Tombstone legacy piece. That mentor, when he passed away, at the very British way people do funerals, which is so reserved, you have 300 people passing the mic for about 4 hours. And it was just telling stories about the guy. And somebody who hadn't seen him in 30 years appeared at his funeral and told a story. And it was like, that's the, what am I leaving behind piece, you know? You know, knowing that You know, that's just a remarkable example to me of somebody who has left behind an astonishing legacy that just exponentially grows over time. Anyway, you've got me in a quietly joyful space here, Katie, so thank you. Yeah.
And it's interesting how space kind of opens up, I think, when we think about those things.
Mm.
Because in the day-to-day, it's so easy to feel in a hurry, isn't it?
So tell me about the, because I attended one of them, tell me about the events you've been running, because they're a very different kind of Zoom event.
Well, they're called Little Gatherings, and the idea is it's essentially a kind of live podcast. So I had been running my own podcast, which is called Adventures in Behaviour Change, for a couple of years. But increasingly, it just seemed to me that it wasn't fair that the people listening didn't get to ask the questions that they wanted to ask. I felt like I was just guessing at what might be. Well, I was asking what I wanted to ask, and that was a lot of fun for me. But I did often speak to people afterwards who'd say, oh, yeah, I really enjoyed listening to them, and I'd love to know this. And I thought, oh, I feel like there's a wasted opportunity here. So I decided to experiment with creating a format where people could come along and listen to an interview, and then they could ask questions directly if they wanted to. So I've been doing that since December, and I love those. And they're done in a very kind of intuitive and I don't have a plan really for any of these things, other than that person sounds really interesting and let's see what happens if they join us and we have a conversation. So I've got quite a few of those lined up, and I'm planning to continue those because I find them really enjoyable. But I'm also planning to start doing that from different places in the world. So the thing that's changed for me recently, as of last week, possibly, is that I've got very clear that I won't always be working from here.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm planning an exploration of the way that different people in different parts of the world approach the idea of death and meaning.
Mm.
And I don't feel that that's something, there are many things you can do wherever you are in the world now. Mm. But I never had the opportunity to sort of do a rite of passage. At the age of 19, when I was at university, my dad had Alzheimer's, and I left university to help care for him. At an age where lots of other people were going off traveling, I didn't do the traveling that I was intending to do. And then subsequently, my mum also got Alzheimer's, and I ended up helping to care for her too. And I have a couple of kids, and there have been many wonderful and challenging things in life that one way or another have meant that I haven't done that kind of adventuring ever.
Hmm.
And so it's become apparent to me that that's the thing that I'm going to be doing next. So I'm very lucky in that the work I do can all be done from anywhere in the world. But I'm looking forward to doing the same work alongside something quite different.
Hmm. Sounds cool. By the way, I'm going to make a frank admission. I have I'm not enough creeping up, because I went and attended one of your little gatherings, and I went, I couldn't do that. I couldn't get, nobody would come.
Oh, Tom, I suspect that might not be true, but anyway.
I'm sharing a bit of humanity there. So you managed to get a big group of people to come along to it. Well, not enormous, but a tangible group of people to come along to it.
Well, I'll be completely honest with you. It varies enormously.
Mm.
And that's fine, because I think whoever comes is that's the perfect combination of people. So
yeah.
If you work on that basis, then you can't really be disappointed.
Well, one of my dearest friends, Pilar Bush, who's one of the leaders in the Cayman Islands, she used to be run tourism in the Cayman Islands for years, and was remarkable at it. And she used to always use the phrase that she'd learned, decisions are made by those who show up. All right. You know, you can invite people, but those who are into it are going to get involved. So sometimes 10 people would come to an event, sometimes 100 would come to an event, you know?
Yeah.
So it's all cool. So yeah, that travel thing isn't necessarily going to happen right away with the way the world is, but then, taken shape for you that's what you're going to do, which is very cool.
It was something that I had planned before the pandemic.
Mm. But
But it's so interesting how one's interests and how new opportunities will just converge suddenly. Mm. So I knew that that was something that was on the cards for me. And it was only when I saw something last week that completely took me aback, mm. that a whole sequence of understandings came together.
Mm.
I love it when that happens. Like, 1 minute you don't know something, 5 minutes later, all kinds of things have fallen into place and you can see what's next. But isn't that the fascinating thing about trying to figure out your life? That you can make spreadsheets and you can try and plan and you can,
yeah.
expect that there will be steady incremental linear progress. But I don't know about you, my life has never looked like that.
I did force it into that box for a long time. But quite a number of people who know me kind of refer to me as Tigger, because I just have huge energy. And you can't really keep that spring coiled up that long. I have definitely for about the last 5 years been in that space of, yeah, let things emerge. And it's great when everything just clicks into place all at once. I had a very big success just yesterday in my core business work, and I'm super passionate about it. It's like there's a type of work I love to do which doesn't come about every day, and I said to somebody today, it's an overnight success, 9 years in the making, but I could literally track it all back and work out what was the first inkling. And it was something in 2012 where a friend and mentee of mine said, I'd love to learn more about this. And I very quickly talked about five people and went, how do we build a program around that for next year? And off connections that happened off the back of that, 9 years later, this massive thing just happened yesterday. And I could trace it right back to that. But yes, if I'd made a spreadsheet saying to get, you know, I was listening to a podcast with the great Rory Sutherland, who is one of the great behaviorists out there. And he said, you know, great innovations and insight are easy to see in hindsight, but very difficult to see in foresight. So I can track it back, but I could never have looked at 2012 and said that one conversation I had with a guy in Cayman called Steve would result in this thing happening to me yesterday. My first qualification was a chartered accountant, right? So it's like, you know, spreadsheets, numbers, plans. But no, I've no idea what's, you know, if I have that squirminess, as you put it, I really like that. I think that's really cool. I used to work in a global business coaching company, and one of the teams we had in London, they had a sort of market segmentation. They only worked with restless business leaders. So they'd like to catch them at the point where they were restless.
Yeah.
Where the business is doing well and everything should be fine, but they're restless. And that was their specific sweet spot that they just really enjoyed working with. And they, once they knew that's what they wanted to do, they basically then built what they did around that. Or as I put it, when you get clear on the why, the how's easy. Yeah. So other than going for a walk this evening and other than sitting with squirminess, is there anything that you're bringing out to the world that you want to share?
Well, there are some more little gatherings coming up. Everybody's welcome. If anybody would like to come to one of those, they're all free.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find information about those at my website. So I can share that if that would be helpful. I think the next one actually is one of your previous guests, Tom. So Catherine Chapman's doing the next little gathering.
Oh, really cool.
Which will be joy.
I love learning from different directions, and having Catherine on, who is an extraordinary portrait photographer. I learned so much about her creative process and how that can apply in business, leadership, so many other forms of life. It was just a remarkable conversation in that regard. So to hear the two of you talk together will be really, really cool.
So. thank you. Well, thank you. And then we've got other conversations lined up. I've got a guest who's going to be talking about eco-psychology, which isn't something that I've ever explored before. So that would be fascinating, especially for those of us who like going out for walks.
So eco-psychology. I seem to be circling this stuff because two of my previous guests, Justine Clement, who was on, I think, last week, and Catherine Sheridan from last year, they're both into forest bathing. And Justine lives just a few miles away from me in the North Downs of Surrey. And in the winter, on a rainy day, she took me into some ancient forests. And it was a very, very cool and different experience. Walk in nature. So that sounds cool. Eco-psychology. There you go.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So you've just got me. It's the difference between, it's a weird out of body experience of talking and then realizing I'm just talking and I'm still in quite a deep space from you actually talking about the way you sort of dropped into earlier about what are you going to leave behind and are you enough? All right. Which is a great human question. It's a great exploration.
I think so. And I think, I mean, what do I know? Because I'm just one person and I can only base it on my experience, but I have this hunch that a lot of the time we kind of long to talk about those things.
Mm.
And there aren't always spaces or opportunities to do so. And it can be scary to do so. And we often wait until something forces our hand.
Yeah, that's a very human thing. And it's fear, right? It's creating a space that people feel comfortable in talking. And I mean, just in a very different but similar thing, but 2 weeks ago, I had to go to one of the local hospitals because I had a feeling I'd had the year before. Like last year in April, I ended up with a deep vein thrombosis, a DVT in my left leg, which was caused by the first month of lockdown, sitting in my chair, doing Zoom calls 12 hours a day, offering help to people in crisis management and not going outside in the center of London to walk because I wasn't sure you should walk near people or anything. I left it so long because I didn't want to go to a major hospital in the middle of a plague, as it felt at the time, that the blood clot was basically the whole length of my leg, like, and I was in great pain and it took about 3 weeks to clear. I'd left it really long. Luckily, there's some fantastic specialists at the big hospital I went to. This year, I felt it in the other leg and I went, I know what this is. It's not a pulled muscle. I can sense what it is. I was absolutely clear. So I just went straight down to the hospital within 36 hours. They did the blood test. They went, yep. They did the ultrasound. They went, yep, you caught it really early. Don't worry. And within 2 days, it was feeling fine. But it is, you know, and that's just a simple expression of the fact that why didn't I do it earlier? Denial and fear. I didn't want to go to the hospital that had, at that point in time, an ambulance pulling up every 20 minutes with a COVID case in April last year. I just didn't want to go there. As it turned out, it was... The NHS is incredible and they've segregated everything. There was nobody going to the hospital for anything non-COVID. They were all so scared. So you got sore, seen in fight, had a CT scan in 10 minutes. It's like, yeah, there's nobody here. It's fine when you come. It's like, I personally love those kind of conversations. I'm, you know, my friends know that I don't do small talk. It's like, I'm not interested. I live for people and ideas. And, I'm taken a bit by surprise about how easily you not turned the tables on me as an interviewer, but you just kind of like got me out of a space where I'm 100% focused on the other person. And I'm sitting here just in a reflective space trying to maintain an interview.
Well, maybe we just dropped into a space together.
And yeah, that's cool.
It doesn't matter so much.
It doesn't matter at all. It's all cool. It's actually, it's really cool. It's just a great experience. Every conversation, this is the 49th show I've done of this, and every conversation is different, and every person brings not just different things to talk about, but a different energy, style, and approach. And it just is awesome, the variety that humans bring. I've been writing recently, my daily writing, about the difference between complicated and complex, and a phrase I love to use, which is business is simple, people are complex. And there is no, you can put in the space shuttle up is Elon Musk doing satellites is complicated. You can solve for it, but there's no solution to humans. And we are irrational. When we talk about working from, you know, this transition for people who, you know, do they go back to the office or not? There is no, we don't act in rational ways. We act based upon how we feel. So we can look at all the data in the world, but you cannot predict. I was talking to somebody very recently with thousands of staff all over the world, and they're going, they're finding really radically different responses to people in different parts of the world that cannot be correlated to the prevalence of COVID, right? And they're looking to solve for it, and they can't. And for me, the part of the answer for that, and I've been writing about it in a couple of future ones, is there are, I'll mention this, do you know the concept of desire paths or lives?
Yes.
And I just discovered this a while ago, and I was living in London with all the commons and the parks. And so for others, it's the idea of you can pave paths across Clapham Common or something, but if it's not the where people want to go, they will eventually, like sheep in the countryside, they'll carve a path of their own. And I thought there were lessons from that for corporate leaders looking at people coming back to work, because some universities in the US, Michigan State has taken the approach of not putting any paving down in green spaces at all, leaving it a year or two and see where the students create a path, then paving it.
Yeah.
University of Wisconsin has said, we're going to try and get it right first time and then be open to changing it. And I kind of like that, because innovation isn't going to come from the people who set the initial plans saying, well, our bias is to do the same thing, but we might let people stay at work from home 1 or 2 days a week. But if you turn around and say, we think instinctively Tuesday through Thursday works, right? And then tell us what you think. It's like, right, create your own desire lines. And if people start showing up for work on a Tuesday at 7 o'clock in the morning, right, because they want to crack on, but they want to leave at 3 because they've got used to picking the kids up from school, you know, that might be pretty cool too. So anyway, that's something I'm currently thinking about what comes next. So, you know, anyway, I could ramble all day because you've got me in a certain space. So I'm kind of in a rambling mode. So I won't ramble. I'll honor your time and you can go for a walk.
You're just creating desire paths, I think, Tom. That's what it is.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. So what I'll do is I'll just leave you to muse, to give us your last words and your last thoughts. And I'll say thank you very much for coming. So I'll let you close us out.
Well, thank you for this opportunity to think about what comes next, because, as I said, I don't know for sure. And it's kind of lovely to be able to be in that space, and it's really lovely to be witnessed in that space. So thank you, because I know that whenever we have the opportunity to explore things and be witnessed exploring them, then something changes. So thank you for offering that opportunity to me.
It's a pleasure and a privilege. Thank you very much, Katie Elliott. Bye.
Thank you.